world leaders are set to come together in Glasgow, Scotland, for a United Nations climate summit known as COP26. Leading up to the event, scientists and energy experts have reiterated warnings that humanity must keep fossil fuels in the ground to ensure a habitable future planet.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the pit.
On Youth Station.
Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
I am a Muslim.
Islamadi.
Islamadi.
Allah my Lord.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. I'm your host, Muzaffar Haider, and this is Youth Station. Choo choo ka-choo. It's the Youth Station for you. Here in the studio, we have with us Sister
Zainab. Yes.
Sister Zainab.
I'm okay with it when you do it, intro thing, but I cannot do it under any circumstances.
Yeah, but I think that there's a part of you that wants to do it, but it's okay. It's okay. I'll give you time. All right, people need time.
Thank you so much for your patience and understanding.
Yeah. I'll give you time.
But I feel like
some people
you
are made for certain things. Yeah, definitely.
You were made for that intro, Bo.
That's true. Maybe I was made for that
and
intro.
And it's your style, you know? I don't feel like I am competent enough for it.
Yeah, interesting topic that you've just cracked open. There are certain types of people, and Allah has created different roles for different people. I mean, what do you think about that?
I love those people. What? I love those people who have such a well-defined role in life, and it's like they've been made for it.
Like a mother? A mother? Like
I was thinking about Cristiano Ronaldo, but okay.
Oh, like footballers, right?
Like,
yeah, yeah.
And you know, certain things, like, you know, you look like at Serena Williams and you feel like this woman was made for tennis.
Uh-huh.
You know, you look at Van Gogh and you feel like this man was made to cut his ear off.
Did you just
and
say
paint.
Van Gogh?
Huh?
Van Gogh? Because normal people just say Van Gogh. Yeah.
And then you look like someone.
Hans Zimmer. You don't know Hans Zimmer.
Yes, I so do Hans. No, Hans Zimmer.
Hans Zimmer.
I don't pronounce his name
man.
Like that.
I mean,
yes,
I want to buy him
Allah.
One day. And like that, the music
he's a
he
genius.
Creates. Yeah, the musical.
Absolute genius.
Absolutely.
See, people like these were Masha created Allah. For those things that they do in life.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, there are some mums who just fit. They are really good mums. There are some dads who are really good dads. I don't know. There are people who have jobs. A producer of this show. May God bless her. Like, she is such a good producer.
Yes.
So I could not come up with topics like this, but she does. Allah has created her with certain traits that allow her to do that thing. And the
She's
same with
so
all of these
She's competent
examples.
In what she does. MashaAllah. Right. And I feel like you've been made for media.
Really?
I really do. You have the creativity. You have the personality. You're good at putting up a show. I'm not saying that you're not a genuine person.
You're calling me a show.
You no. I'm calling you a showman.
Oh, showman.
Yes.
What about you? I know you really hate this, sister, to be put on the spot like this, but what are you competent for? Let's try. It's the hardest thing.
What
in the
am
world.
I competent
Let's try
for?
And be a bit
I'll
honest.
Tell you right here. Animals.
You like animals?
So much.
I love animals. So you're competent.
With animals, I do so well. I'm super patient, and I'm more daring, you know. And I'm willing to go the extra mile. I remember I was fostering a kitten for a while. She was blind in one eye, and then she was white all over with a black tail. And we named her Dip because she looked like someone dipped her into ink. And she was a feisty one, right? Mm-hmm. And I was fostering her for a while, and I would wake up in the middle of the night to feed and medicate her.
Wow.
That's how committed I am to animals.
That makes me cringe a little bit. No, I just don't like people who are too attached to animals because it shows their lack, and this is just my generalization, I'm sure it doesn't apply to you, and you might be saying it does, but so I feel like to a certain extent it shows their lack of compassion for humanity.
That's exactly what it is.
Yeah, I knew you'd say that.
No, I don't like compassion for humans. I'm socially awkward. And you always,
I know,
you
yeah.
always, you always disagree with me on that. You believe that I am selectively socially awkward.
I think everybody's socially awkward, but some people
have enjoy the socializing.
You
I don't.
Don't at all?
At all. Brothers and sisters, we're going to go on a short break, so please stay with us.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
See, imagine Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. Imagine he, his eminence, was an ordinary man instead of a messenger of God.
Whoa, okay.
I know. And then...
But that's not fair, because they were competent in literally everything. They could
talk
to animals.
Yeah, he was infallible. Okay, let's take away all the attributes that being a prophet entailed, like talking to animals and walking on water and, you know,
But that's part of their competency. So Jesus, for example, when they say he was a carpenter, alayhi salam, like he was really competent. Like he could carpent the thing.
The heaven out of something.
A beautiful, beautiful crafted chair or something. I don't know.
Maybe Isa alayhi salam is actually one of my favorite prophets after Rasulullah.
Yeah.
I love him so much. There's something about the man just inspires me. But imagine Rasulullah, take away all those qualities that it's innate to being a prophet, right? The miraculous aspect of him. And leave that orphan shepherd boy with a beautiful smile who happened to be really, really kind and trustworthy. Rasulullah was kind and was trustworthy before he became a prophet.
Yeah,
but it was
yeah.
only after he became a prophet that he could make, you know, trees walk up to him and split the moon in two and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Right?
I guess so, yeah, okay.
What would we say he was made to do?
He was very good at business.
Rasulullah.
Like, he was like... And he
people skills, you mean? Or like he was just really
smart? Oh, yeah, definitely.
Smart.
He had good people skills. He knew how to talk to people, how to attract people. He had that quality about him. He was very... good looking, he was good at speaking,
eloquent, amiable, yeah.
Right, Asant, and he also had a natural talent for business, for being a merchant as well, very good at it. I think that's a little bit unique to the Holy Prophet. Then when you think of Jesus, you think of a carpenter, when you think of Moses, Musa alayhi salam, you think of a shepherd.
Nabi Musa was a shepherd?
Yeah, after he ran away from Egypt.
Ah, right.
Well, he worked for Shu'aib. I don't know what he did, Prophet Shu'aib. I don't know, taking water out of the well. I don't know everything that they used to do.
I don't know.
Then.
Yeah, maybe the example of the prophets, because like their entire life and everything that they were led up to that moment where they became a prophet. But like
they
case
were
of
very
Nabi
skilled
Isa,
people.
Salam,
that's what we have to recognize.
He was born prophet.
Who?
Nabi Isa. Let's talk about Imam Khomeini. Oh, he wasn't a prophet. He wasn't infallible, and he had a bunch of personalities. He was intelligent. He was charismatic,
yes.
Right? So charismatic, in fact, that the Western media banned him, censored
really?
Him entirely because
I
he was the man
that.
Oozed charisma.
Oh my God!
He was super duper intelligent.
Yeah, he had very broad horizons as well.
Exactly. He was so ambitious, and he took all of these qualities. He invested it into a certain direction
mm-hmm.
to serve a cause.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's a pattern of this in Islamic history where a bunch of people, a bunch of competent people, very well skilled
mm-hmm.
in certain aspects of human attributes,
mm-hmm.
right? And they took those skills, that set of skills that they had, and they put it in the service of deen.
Yeah.
We see it in the Shahada a lot, Shaykh Chamran. Shahid Zainuddin, Shahid Himmat, Shahid Bakiri, you know? Imad Mughni,
Fakhrizadeh, Shahid Fakhrizadeh.
Yeah, exactly. Shahid Fakhrizadeh, the man was a genius, right? And he took all of those abilities and he invested it into the cause of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Yeah, I mean that's
and then he turned it into what he was made for.
Yeah.
Please send any suggestion, any idea to our email that is englishradio@irib.ir.
So I guess, especially when we're talking to the youths, this is, I think, a recurring theme that we often say, is that you need to find your talent. What is it that Allah has gifted you with? What is your special, unique ability?
Hmm.
And use that
Utilize it for the
sake of Islam.
That's
what Islam needs.
And when you look at it like this, not everyone has to become a talaba or student of a seminary. Right, you can go become an engineer, a doctor, a politician, a carpenter, an artist, a writer, a teacher, a lecturer, an astronaut, a whatever, right, that you're really, really good at, but invested in Islam. What did Shahid Fakhrizadeh do? The man was a
scientific genius.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And his expertise were in the field of? He was in nuclear science.
Yes.
And he took all of that genius and he poured it into... into fortifying the Islamic nation, right? So this is what I'm thinking. Find your field of competence, and if you don't have one, create one for yourself. The world is your oyster. You're young, you have time, and get off your patookie, because often we're waiting for inspiration to come and fall on our head. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it doesn't happen like that. You have to go and aspire for it, search for it, and find it. Discover yourself. And once you do, take that, build up on it, and then invest it into the cause of God. And God is going to make you flourish.
Yeah.
Reach your best potential.
Don't do that which is not your gift. Don't force yourself.
Yes.
Because God hasn't created you for a certain thing. You might want to be the best, you know, athlete in the world. Mufassir, yeah, fine. But, you know, you are only good at making jello salad.
And do that. Make jello salad, open a kitchen. I don't know. Maybe tap into your cooking skills.
Yeah, you might love cooking. I mean, that might be what Allah has created you for.
Exactly. Take Brother Mudhafa, for example. He's competent in the field of media. He took that and then he channeled it into Islamic stuff. And he's successful, mashallah.
What about you?
I'm good with animals. I want to stick to that, okay?
But
they calm me down.
Okay.
They're my safe place. I find in animals my zen. And I must stick to that because I feel like, you know.
But you want to work in a zoo, or do you want to be a? Because I wanted to be a paleontologist at one point.
Oh, me too. I wanted to be a vet.
A vet.
I ended up studying philosophy instead. Don't ask me how that happened, but. Animals, when working with them, you really feel the power and the compassion of Allah. When working with animals, you understand why Allah is so patient and merciful toward human beings.
Right?
My cat scratches my favorite dress and knocks over my lamp, but still I'm worried whether she got hurt, whether she has food, whether she's happy, because I know she's just a cat, and I feel like Allah looks at us like that as well. Guys, find what you're good at. And utilize it.
I just want to say
Islam.
Hadith off the back of that before you end the show. Hadith, so the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, he said that a person may find paradise because of the compassion that they show to even a sparrow.
That's all the time we have for today, guys. Be good and stay well. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
I am what I am because you made. I have what I have. My love is strong because you are the one I call Creator, my Alpha and Omega, my Protector and my Maker. Because of you, in weakness I am braver. My
the limelight. Despite the British government narrative of a return to normality in classrooms, schools in areas with high coronavirus rates say they have struggled to function, with many staff off sick and problems securing supply teachers because of high demand. We'll prepare for you an article written jointly by Sally Wheel and Nicola Davis. The piece is titled, English Schools Struggle to Cope as COVID Wreaks Havoc. The article has been published by the British newspaper The Guardian. Please stay with us for more of Sally Wheel and Nicola Davis's article. Schools in England, hit by high numbers of COVID-19 cases among staff and pupils, have been forced to reinstate mask wearing, send whole year groups home to study online, and in some cases close early for half term as the pandemic continues to wreak havoc in education. Despite the British government narrative of a return to normality in classrooms, schools in areas with high coronavirus rates say they have struggled to function, with many staff off sick and problems securing supply teachers because of high demand. For example, recently one Devon school was missing a third of its workforce. A school in Wiltshire was forced to send two-year groups home early for half term, and a Buckinghamshire junior school closed and moved to online learning. Meanwhile, in Northamptonshire, The Guardian has learned that one primary school had almost 50% of pupils off with COVID during a period of about a week between the end of September and 5th of October. The school has since introduced key stage bubbles and restrictions to social contacts and external visitors, but according to unions, there have been delays in many areas across the country in introducing mitigating measures because of a lack of clear advice. Julie McCulloch, Director of Policy at the Association of School and College Leaders, said local public health officials had the opinion within the government's guidance to introduce enhanced measures in schools to tackle infection rates. She said, "Some have already done this, but many schools and colleges are struggling to get clear advice when they have an outbreak and feel they are yet again being left to manage a public health crisis with insufficient support." In a recent Association of School and College Leaders survey, more than 90% of head teachers said teaching and learning had been impacted by pupil and staff absence this term, and almost a third said the impact had been severe, while 4 out of 5 had been targeted by anti-vaccination campaigners. In one case, a school pupil was pushed into the road by a protester after refusing to take a leaflet. One head teacher with a 35% consent rate said the anti-vax movement is more prolific and louder than scientific or NHS argument. Ben Davis, head teacher at St Ambrose Barlow Roman Catholic High School in Wardley, Greater Manchester, said, "People are on their knees." He added, "There's never been such a hard half term as this during the whole pandemic. Schools have been thrown into this with no measures or restrictions, and we've been told to deal with it." COVID rates have been higher in this school than before, with 80 positive cases and up to 14 staff off at a time. Ben Davis, the head teacher, said, "We've reinstated face masks in corridors and classrooms on the advice of public health. Achieving cooperation with that is much, much harder than it was, as there's nowhere else in their lives that children are having to wear face masks. In Cornwall, it has been similarly challenging. David Barton, executive officer of the Cornwall Association of Secondary School Head Teachers, said, "We have had school closures and several year group closures across primary and secondary schools, with a couple having to close early for half term due to staffing pressures." He added, "Our COVID rates have remained high since the summer and are increasing, currently 555 per 100,000 population, and half of all cases are in school-age children." The British government's vaccination rollout for 12 to 15-year-olds is fraught with problems. David Barton said take-up among Cornish pupils is higher than the national average, but capacity to roll out the immunisation at pace simply isn't there, so less than half of our schools have so far had any immunisations. Elsewhere, local authorities have been accused by unions of failing to support schools to take steps to mitigate high case numbers. While Cambridgeshire has taken action in schools to bring back face masks in communal spaces, social distancing for staff and online meetings where possible, the situation has played out very differently in other parts of the country, including in Northamptonshire, an area where case rates are among the highest in England, as just over 642 cases per 100,000 population in the most recent 7 days for which data is available. Rochelle Wilkins, the regional officer for the GMB union in Northamptonshire, said, "I've been visiting schools in the last 4 or 5 weeks, and it's been basically a free-for-all. I've been into a school recently and worn a face mask in a meeting. Nobody else had a face mask on." On 11th of October, a letter from 6 trade unions, including the GMB union, was sent to local authority chief executives and directors of public health across England, asking for urgent steps to be taken to help keep pupils safe in schools. Rochelle Wilkins said the North Northamptonshire Unitary Council had moved to reintroduce face masks in schools, though head teachers will be able to use their discretion. Lucy Whiteman, Joint Director of Public Health at North and West Northamptonshire Council, said schools had been following Department for Education's guidance since the start of the new school year and are being supported by the council's team. She said, "Directors of public health do not have the authority to override the Department for Education guidance in place," adding, "We're only able to offer advice to schools. Head teachers have to take the final decision themselves." Lucy Whiteman said a letter was sent recently to parents via schools. She said, "This provides advice for during half term and on return to school." The letter includes asks that pupils adhere to any requests made by the head teachers for the use of face coverings where infection risks are identified and or outbreaks occur, and that parents support this. A Guardian call out to readers prompted dozens of responses from anxious teachers and anxious parents. One secondary teacher said, "All the hand sanitizing dispensers are empty and everyone is acting as if there is no pandemic at all." Another said, "Our school has seen more upheaval than when we were closing for bubbles," adding, "One class had 30% positive cases in recent days. Parents are demanding online learning for their sick children, but we are on our knees just trying to keep classes running." Robin Bevan, head teacher of South End High School for Boys, said, "It's genuinely very varied across contexts and locations," adding, "Case numbers are rising, which is noticeable in pupil absence levels and challenging for sustaining remote and on-site learning, but not yet at a level that disrupts significantly." Robin Bevan noted, "There is a lurking background fear that it will get worse and that there isn't really a plan. We do seem to have left to get on with it. The reservoirs of resilience are running dry." Jules White, head teacher of Tanbridge High School in Horsham in West Sussex, said, "There had been about 200 student infections to date in his school," adding, "The pressures of supporting students who continue to have their learning disrupted are significant, especially when colleagues are also having periods of isolation that last 10 days. Confidence in the government is wearing thin." Jules White said, "In the middle of the pandemic, the government said all children's schooling was their first priority," adding, "I will believe that if we see substantial investment in education after the upcoming comprehensive spending review." A Department for Education spokesperson responded, "The protective measures in place in schools strike a balance between managing transmission risk with enhanced ventilation, regular COVID testing and vaccinations of older students and staff, and reducing disruption to education by removing the need for those contacts in bubbles to self-isolate and for face coverings to be worn in most cases." The spokesperson for the Department of Education added, "If there are particularly high COVID case rates in schools or colleges in their local area, local directors of public health may advise they reintroduce temporary additional measures such as increased testing, but face-to-face education should be prioritized."
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 41 meters, 7,410 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5 and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box 19395-6767 Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
This is A to Z. An introduction to Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, only a name from Islam. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Most Beneficent, the Most Merciful. We cannot say whether this interesting prediction has already materialized fully in this present time or is it yet to happen in future. Imam Ali alayhi salam said, a day will come for people when only letters and drawings from the Holy Quran and Islam in name only will remain among them. Muslims' mosques will be improved in building structure and ruined as regards the guidance they provide. Some may argue that this is what we are witnessing as we speak. There are so many mosques throughout the Islamic lands, and if you go to the west even, you see that there are Islamic centers, there are mosques, there are Imam Bargahs, there are Husseinias, under different titles. But how effective are they? This is a question some people raise. Now, when you look at what Imam Ali alayhi salam has said, we see that this prophecy of Imam Ali alayhi salam is coming to fruition. It's the reality, the new reality that we may be facing. Again, there are others who argue that no, our mosques are still effective. The underlying work that is being done, the community service that is being done, the message of guidance that is being sent out from these mosques, it still is very much alive. Again, it is a topic for another day where we debate and discuss this. But we know that Imam Ali alayhi salam informed us of a time where our masjids will become ineffective and the message of guidance will cease to come out of them. Welcome back, dear listeners. We don't know whether we have reached that time or not, where our mosques have become ineffective in essence in terms of it sending out the message of guidance, but we know that this is something that is bound to happen now or in future. But surely what we are witnessing, some examples of it here and there are prevalent in the society. When we talk about the message of guidance not going out of the mosques and the mosques becoming all grand and all fancy and all filled with facilities, air conditioner, nice rugs, nice carpets, nice building, nice construction. We do see it happening where the effectiveness of these mosques in some cases may be going down. It is surprising that in such cases the Muslims complain about their backwardness when they themselves have caused it by their mistaken notion that it is sufficient to adopt Muslim names and pay a nominal lip service to Islam, and that Quran is there only for decorative purposes. They have not accepted the Quran's real role as a book of unbeatable value for education, training, and application in day-to-day life. Nor have they accepted Islam as a school that must engage and permeate their practical and intellectual lives. Can you find a real Islamic society which follows Islam in substance, not just in form, which has been backward or has not enjoyed an honorable status in the world? This is a question we raise and leave you with Allah's permission. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Thank you very much for staying with us till the end of today's episode of A to Z. Don't forget to log on to our website at parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you all in the care of Allah. Till next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
In the limelight. Former U.S. President Donald Trump on Monday, 25th of October, filed a civil lawsuit against the House January 6th committee in an effort to block the release of documents relating to his actions on that day. The article you're about to hear has been written by CBS News journalists Caroline Linton, Robert Lagar, and Zach Hudak. The piece is titled, Trump Sues House January 6th Committee to Block Release of Documents. Stay with us for more. Former U.S. President Donald Trump on Monday, 25th of October, filed a civil lawsuit against the House January 6th committee in an effort to block the release of documents relating to his actions on that day. In the filing, Donald Trump referred to the committee's investigation as an illegal fishing expedition. President Biden last week rejected Donald Trump's assertion of executive privilege for the documents requested by the committee. And the White House said it would give the panel access to federal records connected to the Trump White House and the January 6th insurrection. The former president's clear objective is to stop the select committee from getting to the facts about January 6th, and his lawsuit is nothing more than an attempt to delay and obstruct our probe. Precedent and law are on our side. Representatives Liz Cheney and Benny Thompson, who chaired the January 6th committee, said in a statement on Monday night. The select committee's authority to seek these records is clear, the statement continued. We'll fight the former president's attempt to obstruct our investigation while we continue to push ahead successfully with our probe on a number of other fronts. The lawsuit comes on the eve of the committee's voting on whether to hold Donald Trump's senior advisor, Steve Bannon, in criminal contempt for defying a subpoena to appear. On Monday night, the committee released a resolution asking for Steve Bannon to be held in criminal contempt, saying documents and testimony for Bannon are critical to the Select Committee's investigation. If the committee votes in favor of holding Bannon in criminal contempt, the whole House will vote on it. If a majority of the House votes to do so, it will send a criminal contempt referral to the U.S. attorney. The resolution also said the reason Steve Bannon's lawyer has given for his failure to comply with the committee's subpoena, executive privilege, would not apply here and has not even been invoked by communication with the select committee. Donald Trump's lawsuit names the committee chair Benny Thompson, the entire committee, the National Archives, and David Ferrero, the director of the National Archives. The lawsuit accuses the committee of sending an illegal, unfounded, and overboard records request to the National Archivist and says the records are protected by numerous legal privileges. The lawsuit cites several of the requests of the committee, including its request for all documents and communications relating to the prepared public remarks and actual public remarks of Donald Trump between 3rd of November 2020 and 20th of January 2021. Issued public statements are one thing, but the notion that Congress is somehow entitled to ask for and review any and all private conversations, remarks, or drafts of public statements considered by the President of the United States and his close advisors without limitations on, among other things, subject matter, would destroy the very fabric of our constitutional separation of powers and invade fundamental privileges designed to maintain the autonomy and functioning of the executive branch, the lawsuit says. The lawsuit also takes issue with the request for all documents and communications within the White House on 6th of January 2021, relating in any way to the President and the Vice President, over 24 of the highest-ranking officials in the federal government and members of Congress. The lawsuit alleges the committee is no way entitled to these records. On 6th of January, Donald Trump spoke at Stop the Steal rally ahead of Congress convening to count the electoral votes, a largely ceremonial final step affirming Joe Biden's victory. Donald Trump encouraged his supporters to walk over to the Capitol to protest the results of the election. Chaos erupted at the Capitol a few hours later as thousands of Mr. Trump's supporters descended on the Capitol, breaking windows and ransacking the building. Lawmakers, including former Vice President Mike Pence, fled the floor amid the riot, which led to the deaths of 5 people and the arrests of hundreds more. Donald Trump was impeached by the House of Representatives 1 week later for inciting the riot, but was later acquitted by the Senate. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi created the House Select Committee earlier this year to establish the truth of what happened on that day. Despite the initial attempts to make it a bipartisan committee, Representatives Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger, 2 of the 10 Republicans who voted to impeach Donald Trump, are the only 2 Republicans under 9-person committee. In addition to Steve Bannon, the committee has subpoenaed the organizers of the Stop the Steal rally, as well as former Justice Department official Jeffrey Clark, former White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows, Communications Director Dan Scavino, and Pentagon Chief of Staff Kashyap Patel.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This discord is an imposed one. July 18th, 2015. Today, the world of Islam is facing many problems. Islam has placed great emphasis on the unity, unanimity, and brotherhood of Muslims. We can hold fast by the rope that Allah stretches out individually, but Islam does not advise this. And hold fast altogether by the rope which Allah stretches out for you. Holy Quran, chapter 3, verse 103. All of us should hold fast by this rope together. We should be together, despite all the emphasis. Today, we Muslims, despite all this emphasis, today we Muslims do not unfortunately obey this command of Islam. And as you can witness, this is the result. I want to ask all Muslims, particularly ulama, scholars, intellectuals, officials, politicians, and outstanding personalities in all Islamic countries, to see the treacherous hands of the enemies of the Islamic Ummah. This discord is not a natural one. Rather, it is imposed on and suggested to us. Muslims can naturally live together. Experience has shown that when the enemies' temptations, deception, and malevolence do not enter the arena, they can live together. We have seen this in our own country. We have seen this in Iraq and other Islamic countries.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Who is the real enemy? January 9th, 2015. This is the responsibility of everyone. Today, all Muslims throughout the world should think about the Islamic Ummah and Islamic unity. If we think of the Islamic Ummah, the interest of our countries will be safeguarded as well. The interest of the enemy lies in separating us from one another. His interest lies in attacking one country and raising an army with the help of another country. His interest lies in this. We should not allow them to do this. Who is the enemy? The enemy is American capitalism and global arrogance, which is headed today by America and the Zionists. The Zionist government in occupied Palestine is part of the dangerous group and the deadly cancer which the Zionists have created in the world. We should stand up against them.
I wanna thank you. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Poreza, London.
Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
Sayed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian Administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
Protecting press freedom. Supporters of the WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange marching all the way to the British Royal Courts of Justice today ahead of an upcoming extradition hearing. The starting point, the BBC headquarters.
One of the main issues that we have with Assange is that his extradition, the case which is being heard next week, the whole basis of the case, the facts about the case, most of this never gets anywhere near the British media.
The U.S. government is attempting to extradite Assange under an old treaty with the U.K. for publishing damning documents of U.S. war crimes in Iraq and Afghanistan and human rights violations elsewhere. His supporters say the charges are politically motivated.
It means basically that every journalist anywhere in the world has to be afraid of a possible extradition, especially if he is reporting on national security issues, not just by the United States or other Western countries, but by any country.
Just last month, it was revealed that in 2017, as Assange began his fifth year holdup in the Ecuadorian embassy in London, the U.S. government plotted to kidnap or assassinate him on British soil. Still, the U.K. is carrying on with his trial.
It besmirches a reputation which at least the British establishment think they have got internationally. It's supposed to be a beacon of free speech. It's supposed to be a beacon of the free press. And while Julian Assange is in Belmarsh...
Since he was evicted from the Ecuadorian embassy 2 years ago, Assange has been languishing in a maximum security prison in southeast London. His next court hearing is set for October 27th and 28th. If extradited, he'll face 175 years in a U.S. prison.
It'll be a watershed moment in the most important press freedom case of the century. And these protesters say they're hoping that the U.K. government and justice system will do the right thing and put an end to what they describe as the show trial of Julian Assange. Saeed Poreza, London.
In a press conference held by the Sudanese pro-civilian rule factions, the Force of Freedom and Change factions, FFC, has categorically rejected any move to dissolve the government without consent of the factions and Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok. Meanwhile, an unarmed group stormed the building of the Sudan news agency Suna and used physical and verbal violence to terrorize journalists and media professionals in attempt to prevent the convening of the conference, which had been announced earlier by FFC.
We in the Forces of Freedom and Change affirm our continuous support for Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok and his government, who were chosen by the FFC to lead the transition in Sudan, and we reaffirm our full support and coordination with him.
Sudan has been grappling with the biggest political crisis in its 2 years old transition. The military and civilian groups have been sharing power in troubled alliance since long-standing President Omar al-Bashir was ousted in 2019. Observers believe that the only way out for Sudan's current crisis through expanding base of participation and unification of revolutionary forces.
I assure that there is no way out of this crisis without expanding the base of participation and rearranging the internal conditions of the forces of the Sudanese revolution as the guarantor of any real transformation in the political scene.
On the other hand, protesters from the splinter FFC faction, the National Charter Alliance, have been holding a sit-in outside Khartoum's presidential palace for the seventh day, with soldiers around the site providing protection.
Time is running out for all government components without reaching a solution for the political crisis, while FCC rejects all the mediation and solution made by the military before handing over the power to the civilian next month. Muhammad Ali Fazari, Khartoum.
A new
new poll shows that 3 out of every 4 French people believes that their purchasing power has diminished due to rising inflation, and 90% of the nation is worried about it. The nation's economy minister departed from his Western peers by admitting that inflation will continue to rise until 2023 at the earliest. Combined with unemployment, which was entrenched even before the coronavirus recession, the admission seems to announce the beginning of dreaded stagflation.
La vie est chère et encore plus à Paris.
Life is expensive, especially in Paris. From real estate to basic shopping needs to even the price of a simple lunch, our purchasing power keeps going down.
The government has just announced a cap on household gas prices until the end of 2022. Natural gas has soared to record highs across Europe. They also announced a one-time payment of 100 euros to those who earn less than 2,000 euros per month, which amounts to 60% of the population. However, many say the one-off payment is not nearly enough.
Ça devient compliqué, ça diminue fortement.
No, it's not enough at all. When somebody is only taking home 2,000 euros a month, 100 euros isn't nearly enough to make difference when it comes to the energy costs. The government is not helping the middle class much at all.
The Yellow Vest protests, which initially kicked off 3 years ago due to rising fuel prices, just began what they called Season 2 last weekend. They are promising to continue marching. By a huge margin, purchasing power is the number one issue ahead of France's presidential election next year, just as it has been in all the elections since the great financial crisis began.
It's really fragile right now. The middle class just isn't seeing a fair relationship between their work and the amount they are paid.
Inflation is being reported seemingly worldwide, as the coronavirus lockdowns may have created a monetary monster. Many economists say the only solutions are controls on prices, as well as corporate profits, and higher wages, which have remained stagnant across the West for decades. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
This was the first face-to-face meeting of EU leaders since the bloc's energy crisis really came to the fore. Millions of citizens simply don't have the money to pay for electricity and gas bills, which have skyrocketed since the start of the year.
We will intensify our outreach to the different suppliers, also to diversify the supply we do have, and we have to speed up the work on interconnections.
Experts say Iran, with its enormous oil and gas reserves, is an obvious option.